Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 236, entitled Climbing the Bush Family Tree, Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 4. In Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 2, For the Record program number 214, we took a look at the rise in oil prices prior to the 1980 election, and in turn the role of the petroleum industry, the Central Intelligence Agency, or elements thereof, Saudi Arabia, and last but most assuredly not least, George Bush, who as director of the CIA was intimately involved in providing false estimates on Saudi oil production, Soviet oil production, and, to a certain extent, at least by extension, the huge rise in gas prices that accompanied the supposed oil shortage. That, in turn, had much to do with electing Ronald Reagan president and George Bush vice president in 1980. I realize that this is a tall order to cover in just a few seconds, but for those of you who would like to examine the information in greater detail, For the Record program number 214, Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 2. That program also dealt with the increase in petroleum prices and gas prices just prior to the election of 2000, which of course is going on right now. And once again, we've got an oil man named George Bush, this George W. Bush, the son of George Herbert Walker Bush, running on the Republican ticket. By the way, this program, like For the Record program 237, which follows, being recorded on July 16th of the year 2000. Gas prices continue to rise and a supposed cut in, an increase in Saudi oil production and reduction in the price of crude has so far failed to materialize. Reading now from the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, July 13th of the year 2000. This is an article by Peter A. McKay, MC, capital MC, capital KAY, Dateline New York, and headlined Crude Prices Rise as Saudis Don't Raise Output. This could be subtitled Business as Usual, and it reads in part as follows. Crude oil futures rose after Saudi Arabia didn't follow through on its promise to boost output. Skipping down, quote, every day that we don't have an official announcement from the Saudis, traders are becoming more skeptical, unquote, said Phil Flynn, an analyst with Aileron Trading Corporation in Chicago. Again quoting, what seemed to be in the bag a week ago is not necessarily a done deal, unquote. So far, the Saudi oil production increase and consequent market price decrease has failed to materialize. That again from the Wall Street Journal of Thursday, July 13th of the year 2000. Now, once again, as I indicated at the top of this broadcast, we have a George Bush from the same family, a career oil man running on the Republican ticket, in this case president, and in 1980 vice president, although many, myself included, believe that George Herbert Walker Bush was the real power behind the throne, so to speak, in the Reagan administrations. Reading now from the San Jose Mercury News of Monday, July 3rd of the year 2000, this is an article by H. Joseph Hebert, or Hebert, H-E-B-E-R-T, of the Associated Press. It's Dateline Washington, headlined, Oil Companies Pumping Cash into Bush's Campaign. This article reads in part as follows. While locked in a string of disputes with the Clinton administration, the oil industry has pumped more than $1.5 million into George W. Bush's campaign. Oil companies will be seeking Bush's help on a range of issues should he be elected president. Recent high gasoline prices have brought energy policy into the campaign as Democratic presidential contender and Vice President Al Gore tries to tar Bush, the Republican governor of Texas, as a pawn of big oil. Bush, himself a former oil man from Midland, Texas, says it isn't so. But across a range of issues, from drilling in an Alaskan wildlife refuge to new rules setting the price of oil taken from federal land to whether to pursue a controversial international agreement on climate control, oil company executives believe Bush and the people he would appoint to key posts will be more receptive to their point of view than President Clinton's team. In fact, the industry's relationship with the Clinton administration and Gore himself has often bordered on hostile. The industry has contributed less than $100,000 to Gore's campaign. Last week, Gore said the nation was, quote, vulnerable to big oil interests trampling on the public interest, unquote. Bear in mind that they've contributed the oil companies, that is $1.5 million to former or to current oil man George W. Bush. Summarizing the rest of the article, the key points on which the Clinton administration and a potential Bush administration disagree are opening up a coastal strip of the Arctic National Life Wild Refuge in northern Alaska to drilling. The Kyoto Accord, in which environmentalists say U.S. acceptance of this agreement on global warming, agreement mandates a reduction of heat-trapping greenhouse gases. Oil companies have resisted that particular agreement. Gore has been supportive of it and was instrumental in crafting the agreement. The oil companies are opposing it, and George W. stands to serve his masters. Another point is the EPA policy of trying to eliminate sulfur in gasoline and diesel fuel. The oil companies are simply trying to achieve a reduction rather than a complete elimination. George W. and the Clinton administration and the petroleum industry differ on this, with Bush and the petroleum industry of a common interest. The Clinton administration has been trying to get a lot of money for oil that has been taken from public land. Clinton administration is claiming that that was an enormous ripoff of the public interest. The petroleum interests are saying it ain't so, and the fight against that has been led by Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, a Republican of Texas, of course, the state that George Bush is the governor of. And the last point on which they disagree is oil exploration. Apart from the Arctic refuge, the industry believes that George Bush might also be more receptive than Clinton to developing oil and gas resources on federal land in mountain areas in the West. Now, one of the reasons why it stands to reason that George W. would be more receptive to some of these proposals than Clinton, not only the fact that he himself is an oil man, and bear in mind that just as his father, an oil man, was running on the Republican ticket when there was a huge rise in gas prices, creating public dissatisfaction with the status quo, and also, not incidentally, inflation, George W. Stands to serve his masters as well, as I said, and there's every reason to assume that the people he would appoint are people similar to those he already has in key advisory positions on his campaign. By the way, that last article from the San Jose Mercury of Monday, July 3rd of the year 2000. Now, the following about some of the people that Bush has on his campaign as advisors and some of the people that would be representative of the types of individuals that he is going to have, quite possibly, if he gets elected. This article is from the Financial Times, that, of course, of London, of Friday, June 23rd of the year 2000. This article by Richard Wolff and Stephen Fidler, F-I-D-L-E-R, is headlined, "Bush Campaign Finds It More Comfortable to Duck the Gasoline Price Issue." Subtitled, "Supported by the Oil and Gas Industry, the Candidate Has Largely Kept Silent." The article reads in part as follows. Rising political heat over surging U.S. gasoline prices has placed George W. Bush, the Republican presidential candidate, in a uniquely uncomfortable position. Politically and personally, the Texas governor is so close to the oil industry that his campaign faces persistent questions about whether his policy positions have been unduly influenced by his relationship with large and small corporations alike. Skipping down. Whatever the true degree of influence of his advisors, there is little doubt that Mr. Bush and some of his closest friends and advisors are deeply immersed in the oil and gas industry. Don Evans, chairman of the Bush campaign, is also chairman of Tom Brown, an independent oil and gas company with a strong position in natural gas in the Rocky Mountains. Mr. Evans is one of the government's closest friends, and their relationship dates back to 1975, when Mr. Bush returned home to the oil boom town of Midland, West Texas, after leaving Harvard. That last sentence again. Mr. Evans is one of the governor's closest friends, and their relationship dates back to 1975, when Mr. Bush returned home to the oil boom town of Midland, West Texas, after leaving Harvard. The governor's first oil job, researching property records, soon led to the creation of his own small company called Arbusto, Spanish for Bush, which invested in low-risk oil wells. By the way, one of the key investment participants in Arbusto Energy was a consortium of wealthy Saudis, who in turn were represented by James R. Bath, who by his own account was recruited into the Central Intelligence Agency by George Herbert Walker Bush when he was director of the CIA. That, by the way, discussed in For the Record program number 186, what does the W in George W. Bush stand for? One of the apparent key contributors to this particular section of financing for Arbusto Energy were the family of Osama bin Laden, terrorist extraordinaire. More about some of the advisors to George Bush's campaign, again from the Financial Times of London of June 23rd of the year 2000. Speaking of the sentiments, the pro-petroleum sentiments, I lived the energy industry, Mr. Bush wrote in his autobiography. I understand its ups and downs. I also know its strategic importance to the United States of America. Access to energy is a mainstay of our national security, unquote. They are sentiments shared by Dick Cheney, the former defense secretary who is heading the search for the governor's vice presidential candidate and is a leading Bush advisor on foreign affairs. Mr. Cheney, now chief executive of Halliburton, the world's largest oil field service company, recently attacked the Clinton administration's policy towards Iran for blocking U.S. investment. So there's certainly reason to agree with the viewpoint that if, in fact, George W. gets elected president, he will be serving his masters in the petroleum industry. That, again, from the Financial Times of June 23rd of the year 2000. George W. has a history of serving the petroleum industry, for which he also works and from which he has made his money, like that of his father, the CIA man. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, June 24th of the year 2000. This is an article by Karen Gullo, G-U-L-L-O, of the Associated Press. It's headlined, headlined, Bush Oil Favor Documented. Subtitled, 1992 Letter Asked White House for Drillers Tax Break. Now, bear in mind that Bush's father, George Herbert Walker Bush, director of the CIA when the pessimistic report about Middle East oil production and Soviet oil production appears to have served as the foundation for not only American subsequent American foreign and economic policy, but also for the enormous increase in the price of petroleum and gasoline and the declining fortunes of the Carter administration, the fatally declining fortunes of the Carter administration. But bear in mind that that same George Herbert Walker Bush was president of the United States when his son, the now candidate for president of the United States, was doing the following. Again, by Karen Gullo of the AP, from the Chronicle of 6/24/2000, Bush Oil Favor Documented, subtitled, 1992 Letter Asked White House for Driller's Break. It reads in part as follows. When small oil producers went to George W. Bush in 1992 for help in getting President Bush to remove a tax on their drilling costs, the son took up their cause with his father's White House. Quote, perhaps the big guy, unquote, should, again quoting, send a signal which will help keep our oil base intact, unquote, the son wrote to the president's chief of staff, aiming to help an industry that had played a role in the Bush family fortunes. Bear in mind that Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense during much of the Bush administration. Skipping down, Bush's rival, Vice President Al Gore, is trying to make the oil ties an issue. He has portrayed Bush as a good friend to oil and gas companies, which have contributed more than $1.5 million to Bush's presidential campaign, according to financial disclosure reports. And skipping down yet again, Bush, now governor of Texas, is still helping the oil industry. He assisted independent oil and gas producers last year when he signed an emergency tax break bill. McClellan defended the move. Quote, the sector was in dire straits, he said. The governor supported it to help small oil and gas producers and field workers who depend on the sector to put food on the table. So please note that that, by the way, is Scott McClellan, a Bush campaign spokesperson. Skipping down, quote, I'm afraid the president has a large political problem in the oil states, unquote, because an administration official has recently been quoted thanking Saudi Arabian oil producers for letting oil prices drop, Ames said in a January 10, 1992 letter to George W. Bush. The trade group wanted President Bush's support for tax relief. Ames told Bush in a letter released by the Bush Presidential Library under the Freedom of Information Act, they ended up getting partial relief. Of course, the then President George Bush wanted oil prices to drop for the same reason that he wanted them to increase when he was running as vice president against Bill Clinton. Rising oil prices results in rising prices and inflation, and that results in deflated political fortunes, as it did fatally for Jimmy Carter, not fatally for Jimmy Carter in a biological sense, but in a political sense. That no doubt is why George Herbert Walker Bush was thanking the Saudis. Note that his son was interfering on behalf of the petroleum industry way back in 1992. I would also note that George W. himself does have a history of political involvement on behalf of the petroleum industry, and specifically involvement pushing in the direction of increasing the price of petroleum. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This is a book called W, Revenge of the Bush Dynasty. It's by Elizabeth Mitchell. Copyright of the year 2000. The book is, in turn, has its ISBN number as 0-7868-6630-6. And again, this is Revenge of the Bush Dynasty by Elizabeth W. Mitchell. It's published by Elizabeth Mitchell, excuse me. It's published by Hyperion Publishers, Hyperion. Now, when George W. was first entering politics, this, by the way, in the same time period, actually a year earlier, when George Herbert Walker Bush was running for vice president, he was about to challenge Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination. This shortly after the period in which George Herbert Walker Bush, as director of the CIA, shepherded the very pessimistic report on Saudi and Soviet oil production, which was to serve as the groundwork not only of American policy, but the foundation for the oil price increase, and also for the subsequent arms buildup and debt incurrement that took place under the Reagan administrations in order to combat the Soviet menace because of supposed depleting Soviet production and depleting Saudi oil production as well. That, again, covered at great length in For the Record program number 214, Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 2. Now, in W. Revenge of the Bush Dynasty, Elizabeth Mitchell writes of George W.'s promotion of deregulation of oil and natural gas prices when he was running for the nomination for the candidacy to become a representative from a Texas district. In other words, this is the first political campaign for George W., and he was entering the race for the congressional seat of the retiring Representative George Mahon, a Democrat of Texas. Writing in W. Revenge of the Bush Dynasty, Elizabeth Mitchell says, speaking of George W., his proposals were crafted by sincerity, not guile. After all, they were exactly the issues that he as an oil man cared about. America, he said, needed a wise energy policy and the deregulation of oil and natural gas prices. But more important, Washington, D.C. needed to get a swift education of the risks of petrol production, how the independents and majors staked everything on gambles that could crash on them, and how, even so, the government was always calling their cards at inopportune times. Quote, "I'm idealistic enough to think some good can be done," unquote, George W. said. He later would say he ran specifically because of his antipathy for the policies of Jimmy Carter, who, of course, had also relieved his father of his duties at the CIA. Note the two key sentences here, speaking of George W., they were exactly the issues that he as an oil man cared about. America, he said, needed a wise energy policy and the deregulation of oil and natural gas prices. And skipping down, he later would say he ran specifically because of his antipathy for the policies of Jimmy Carter, who, of course, had also relieved his father of his duties at the CIA, and who also was relieved of his duties as president in part because of the activities of George Herbert Walker Bush and elements of the CIA and the petroleum industry and the Saudis, that again covered in For the Record program number 214, available from Spitfire. Please note the synchronicity. Actually, note before we get to three very interesting articles from the same day in three different newspapers, Clinton has been concerned about high gas prices and has been making moves in the direction of doing something about it. Note the following from the LA Times of Saturday, June 17th of the year 2000. This is a Washington Post story, Dateline New York headlined, "Clinton says he's worried about high gas prices," subtitled "Politics." He suggests that fuel suppliers may be engaging in price gouging, finding high costs in Chicago and Milwaukee particularly troublesome. Imagine that. Fuel suppliers engaging in price gouging, Dave Emery editorializes. Shocking. I'm sure no such thing is or ever has happened. Obviously, I'm being facetious. This article reads in part as follows. It's Dateline New York. President Clinton said Friday that he is, quote, very worried, unquote, about high gasoline prices in the Chicago and Milwaukee areas, and he suggested that fuel suppliers may be engaging in price gouging. "It's been very frustrating to me," the president said in an interview with NBC TV's Today Show. "I'm quite concerned about it," unquote. In his most extensive comments to date on the subject, Clinton said a modest increase in gasoline costs in the Midwest is understandable, but not the soaring prices that are nearing $3 a gallon at some pumps. Skipping down, listen to the following. He added that the Federal Trade Commission, the Department of Energy, and the Environmental Protection Agency also will investigate. Quote, "I'm very worried about it," unquote, he said. Now note, of course, that any serious investigation into and or control of petroleum will necessarily go through the Energy Department, and I want people to note three articles which all appeared on the same day. Now, these all bear, two of them bear directly on the Department of Energy. Note the synchronicity here, and I do not think that the appearance of these three articles on the same day, the occurrence of the events described in these three articles at the same time, are in any way coincidental. The day is June 15th of the year 2000. Now, the following is from the Los Angeles Times of that day, again, 6/15/2000. This is an article by Kathleen Decker, D-E-C-K-E-R, of the L.A. Times. It's headlined, Lost Hard Drives Crash Richardson's VP Hopes, subtitled Politics, The Energy Secretary's supposed spot on Gore's shortlist of running mates has likely vanished along with those Los Alamos nuclear secrets. This reads in part as follows. Down the drain in Washington this week went not only any lingering confidence in security at the nation's nuclear facilities, but something more ephemeral, Secretary of Energy Bill Richardson's chances of being plucked for the Democratic national ticket. Richardson, who is to appear next week at Senate hearings into the disappearance of critical nuclear files from the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, has been a player in Washington's quadrennial summertime parlor game, Who Wants to Be Vice President? Now, I would note that weakened by the Los Alamos missing secrets scandal, Bill Richardson is also a Latino American and as such would be in a position to influence the critical Latino American vote, which George W., as is no secret, has been making a big bid for. Note the following in this story, skipping down. Born in Pasadena and raised in Mexico City by his Mexican mother, the former New Mexico congressman and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations filled a void in a list of vice presidential contenders dominated by white men. The Los Alamos secrets scandal has now weakened Bill Richardson and obviously also the Department of Energy when Bill Clinton was counting on this in order to, counting on that department, among others, to look into the rising oil prices. Now, that same day, that article from the L.A. Times of June 15th of the year 2000, we note the following from the San Jose Mercury News of June 15th of the year 2000. This is an article by Jonathan S. Landay, L-A-N-D-A-Y, headlined CIA Official to Head U.S. Nuclear Arsenal. It reads in part as follows. It's subheaded Senate OK's General to Oversee Weapons Programs in Wake of Missing Los Alamos Secrets. Note the background of this fellow and the opposition that is and support that has come from the Republican, the Democratic and Republican political sectors. This article reads in part as follows. The Senate on Wednesday approved an Air Force general as the new custodian of the nation's nuclear arsenal, as President Clinton faced a political storm over the disappearance of nuclear weapons secrets from the Los Alamos National Laboratory. The Republican-controlled Senate voted 97-0 to confirm General John Gordon, now the Deputy Director of the CIA, to head the National Nuclear Security Agency. The new agency is a semi-autonomous Energy Department division that began functioning in March. As its chief, Gordon will have primary responsibility for ensuring the reliability of U.S. nuclear weapons and the security of the facilities in which they are designed, assembled, and stored. Minority Democrats, in a dispute with Republicans over the powers of Gordon's new post, had blocked his nomination for weeks. Energy Secretary Bill Richardson, concerned about dilution of his own responsibilities, had opposed creating the new agency. But the growing outcry over the disappearance of portable computer hard drives from Los Alamos containing nuclear weapons secrets forced the Democrats on Wednesday to stop blocking Gordon's nomination. Note here that Bill Richardson, now weakened by this scandal, was opposing it. Note that the individual now in control of this is the deputy director of the CIA, having risen through that agency, at least in part during the period of time when George Bush was either director and or president or vice president, which he was for a 12-year period. And we're going to touch on the elder Bush in just a second. Skipping down, majority Republicans accused Richardson and Clinton of stalling the creation of the new nuclear security agency and undermining its effectiveness by having Richardson serve as its first chief. They also charged that the administration encouraged Democrats to block Gordon's nomination. So note that mysteriously, secrets at the Energy Department disappeared, or those missing computers disappeared at Los Alamos, weakening Bill Richardson's Energy Department, which was going to be looking into the petroleum industry, also torpedoing Bill Richardson's chances as a vice presidential candidate and shoring up the Democrats' influence in the Latino American community. Note also that the deputy director of the CIA has moved into the stewardship of this new wing of the Energy Department. From that same day, the same day on which the L.A. Times reported the weakening of Richardson's candidacy, the San Jose Mercury News reported on the ascension of General Gordon, the deputy director of the CIA, to head the new branch of the Energy Department. Note what George W. was doing and with whom. This is from the New York Times of that very same day, that day being June 15th of the year 2000, an article by Frank Bruni, B-R-U-N-I, Dateline Washington, June 14th, headlined, "The Silent Senior Partner in Bush's Campaign." It reads in part as follows. By most outward signs, former President George Bush has maintained a cautious distance from Governor George W. Bush's quest for the White House, seldom making joint appearances with his son, and rarely commenting on the election. But behind the scenes, Mr. Bush is anything but remote. On several occasions between December and May, Karl Rove, R-O-V-E, the chief strategist for his son's campaign, traveled from Austin, Texas to Houston, where the former president spends the winter, to give him private briefings. His friends say that Mr. Bush regularly exchanges calls or email messages with about a half dozen senior officials in the Texas governor's campaign, and that his chief of staff, Gene Becker, is on the phone with Mr. Rove almost every day, skipping down. Their closeness was suggested by the fact that the Texas governor, who arrived at the family compound in Kennebunkport, Maine, late Friday for a weekend celebration of Barbara Bush's 75th birthday, extended his stay until today and punctuated meetings of his campaign senior staff with plenty of time with Dad. One wonders whether former CIA Director Bush had anything to do with the events affecting the Energy Department, Bill Richardson, and Deputy Director of CIA Gordon's ascension to a key post in the Energy Department. George Bush has a way of the elder Bush of being in interesting places with regard to the petroleum industry. From Farewell America by James Hepburn, published by Frontiers Publisher in 1968, the Kennedy administration was taking action against the petroleum industry. George Bush's name crops up in connection with the Kennedy assassination in a number of ways. In addition to reducing the oil depletion allowance, the Kennedy administration was doing the following, according to Hepburn in Farewell America. On October 16, 1962, a law known as the Kennedy Act removed the distinction between repatriated profits and profits reinvested abroad in the case of American companies in overseas operations. This measure was aimed at American industry as a whole, but it particularly affected the oil companies, which had the largest and most diversified overseas activities. And from the book we used before, W, The Revenge of the Bush Dynasty, by Elizabeth W. Mitchell, here's where George W. Bush was when Kennedy was killed. On November 22, 1963, Barbara Bush was at the beauty parlor getting her hair done in Tyler, Texas, and writing a letter home. Back in September, George Bush had become the first declared Republican candidate for the 1964 Senate elections, a Goldwater Republican, and the two of them were now on a several-city campaign swing. George came to pick her up, and they flew on a Mr. Zeppo's private plane, which he disembarked in Fort Worth, and then flew the Bushes back to Dallas. They had to circle while they waited for the second presidential plane to take off. George W. H. W. Bush in interesting places at interesting times, as has been his son, George W. Bush. This concludes For the Record program number 236, Climbing the Bush Family Tree, Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 4. This is being recorded on July 16th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.